This week on the show, the Bruins are out, the Celtics are about to surprise everybody, and we talk about one of the worst sporting events there is. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. We just got a little more room to talk about nonsense on this show. Alex Barth and Alex Leibowitz with you on the Call In It podcast. And that is because, at least for a bit, we have one less team that is in action. Boston Bruins eliminated on Sunday by the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-1. I'm surprised. I won't lie. I am not shocked they lost the series, but, and we can talk about the officiating, I guess, but it hurt the cause. It didn't change the outcome of the series. The Lightning were the better team. And the Bruins just flattened out. They went back to the team they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I'd say that Tampa Bay was the better team. But it was closer than 4-1. Like, the Bruins were in most games, and they were competing. They had a lot of lapses on the defensive end, though. And, yeah, they just got outplayed at the end of the day. And I don't think they're as good of a team. We saw what they did in the middle of the season. They couldn't bring that back. But I think top to bottom, Tampa Bay is just better.
And now, you know, there's a lot to talk about with the series, and we could get into the individual games. We could get into the officiating. We'll touch on that a little bit at the end. But, I mean, big picture questions. This is going to be a crucial offseason. They have a lot of this team coming back, but they could keep this core together, right, and be a good team. But it feels like they need to make one, if not two, major moves to actually, you know, be a contender now that we've seen them in a 4-game series against Tampa. And I know that at one point, they had the highest chance to win the Stanley Cup. Sure, they were a contender, but now we have more information now. We've seen what it's like in the playoffs. And to me, it starts with Brad Marchand. And the licking thing was entertaining. It was funny. I enjoyed it, but he was a distraction to his team.
Oh, God.
He clearly wasn't a distraction to the Lightning. And he needs to figure out who he wants to be. When he was on in the playoffs between the Toronto series and Tampa, when he was on, it completely changed the game. When he didn't have a good game, the Bruins were nobody. So he's got to figure out right now, who does he want to be? If he wants to still be a pest and a nuisance, that's fine. But he can't do it to the point where it takes him out of the game offensively.
Are you suggesting
that was the biggest problem?
Are you suggesting that he should be traded? Or
No. I just think, look, they shouldn't trade him. He's an outstanding player. But Cassidy, Sweeney, even Bergeron and Chara need to sit down with him and say, you can be a game changer. You can be a difference maker. But if you're doing this bull crap and it's distracting you to the point where you can't put the puck in the net, what does it matter? I'm fine with him being a distraction, and I think this is the first time in recent memory that I can remember saying this. He needs to make sure he's distracting the other team and not his own team.
Yeah, I think that what he did, the licking stuff, it's funny, over the top. And if you're going to do that, you do have to perform. You put that pressure on yourself.
The first time against Toronto was fine because he had a great series. Then he started slumping and he just went to that and it just got in the way.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the reason. I just think he didn't come out and perform. And that's what happens when you solidify yourself as an actual, you know, NHL star.
Right.
That's what he is. He's a guy that the Bruins need to rely on. And instead, he didn't get one shot on goal in game 5. In which they lost 3-1. So obviously his head wasn't completely there, or he just wasn't performing. And, you know, that's going to happen. But if that does happen, you got to make sure you aren't doing that stuff like licking people.
Right. I don't know when you need to lock in and focus.
But I don't know if they're correlated necessarily. I just think he didn't have a great game, and I don't think it was an engagement
thing. It was a couple games in that series, though. And I just think he was so worried about getting under Tampa's skin that it took his mind out of his own game. He was so worried about affecting their game, and not just the licking, all of it. Look, it probably should have been called a trip. It definitely should not have been called an exaggeration, but it was. He flopped a little bit, that penalty in game 5. That kind of stuff, the flopping, the late hits, all of that. It's not just the licking. He tried so hard to be a pest. He wasn't being a hockey player. And that was what bothered me. Look, I he had a fantastic season, maybe the best of his career, and this guy's legit. We know that now. But he's got to start acting like a legitimate scoring threat. He's not a fourth line pest anymore. And he still has that mentality. And in some ways, I'm conflicted here because I don't want him to lose that mentality because that's part of what makes him such a good player. But he needs to understand that they're counting on him for more. than just getting under the other team's skin.
I just think there's a time and place. I don't want him to change. I like the Brad Marchand the way he is. I don't care that he licked people. He probably shouldn't do it. The NHL should have probably stepped in sooner than they did.
Who the hell cares? That
I know who the hell cares, but it is something that, you know, you can't just accept that. That's really bad publicity for the NHL. That said, I want him to continue being that type of guy, licking aside. Because that's the type of player he is.
I do too, but not if it means he gets no shots off in the biggest game
but
of the year.
I think you're making a leap by correlating the two things. I'll go back to this previous point. There's a time and a place to do that type of stuff. When you're down the series 2-1 and the game's not going your way, you don't do it then. Because guess what? You don't have the momentum then. When you do try to get into another team's head, another player's head, is when you're on top and you're playing really well and you're dominating the series. You try to keep them down. It was just a strategic error by a guy who has, you know, made himself kind of noticed or has made a living, but someone who has a habit of being a pest. That's just not the time to do it. There's a way to go about it, a way not to go about it. He didn't go about it in the right way. I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that he didn't really show up in game five or game 4. And I don't think he's the only guy to blame for what happened in game 5 or game 4. The first line played very well. 2 through 4? I don't know. I think Tuukka was pretty good. I don't think he's to blame. So I don't know. I think by just focusing in on Brad Marchand, I don't think that really encapsulates what really happened.
Well, no, I was just starting there. I want to talk about some other players, too, and you brought up Tuukka. This was an interesting playoffs for him because I thought he played pretty well. I do, for the most part. I thought he lived up to expectations. Unfortunately, he went up against Andrei Vasilevsky, who was just amazing in that series. And nobody talked about it because everybody was talking about the officials and about the licking and about the lack of production from the bottom of the roster. But Tuukka, even though he lost the series, I feel like if he plays like that, the Bruins win most series. But they needed shutouts from him on nights that just wasn't going to happen because the offense wasn't there to support him.
Yeah, I don't think you can be upset with how Tuukka played. He performed very well. He answered the call. And that series loss is not on him. There were a lot of holes in that defense. That power play goal to give Tampa Bay the lead in game 5, I feel like it could have been a little bit smoother than it was, led to Tampa eventually winning that game. But Tuukka made plays. He made a lot of really nice plays. And early on in the playoffs, you did see him kind of struggle a little bit at times, but he pulled together. He played how you need your goalie to play if you want to win in the playoffs. You can't blame him for anything in that series.
All right, so the top line was great. Tuukka was pretty good. After that, it got ugly. Who were you most disappointed with in terms of the bottom nine forwards?
Bottom nine forwards. I don't know. It's
because they got nothing from that group. I look at Rick Nash.
Well, that's who everyone's pointing the finger at right now.
Yeah.
Rick Nash is someone who in round one he played very well. He had that tip in against the Maple Leafs, and he had a couple goals in that first series, and he was a really big factor, a veteran guy who was an addition. And, you know, he wasn't a liability at all. And you're looking at him in that first year as being like, wow, that Rangers trade, that really was a great deal for the Bruins. This last round, he kind of ruined that. And he didn't play all that well. His plus minus shows that. And really the entire second line kind of showed that. So Rick Nash is definitely one of the people who you look at. I think Chara, you know, he showed his age at times.
He did.
He got beat a lot. So there are a few guys. I think it was a collective, just poor effort from those bottom three lines.
How about somebody who wasn't on the ice? I'm a little surprised that Ryan Donato did not get as much time in the playoffs as he did. I just think by the time he got in there, he had to catch up to the pace of things, and he just wasn't ready. I would have liked to see them play more in the Toronto series because they needed him against Tampa, and he was still playing catch-up at that point. So that surprised me a little bit. That's something that will get talked about a lot. Real quick, because we're up against it here on this segment, what's your one move for the offseason? One thing you want to see them do? Obviously, there's a couple things they need to do, but one move that you think would be prudent?
I just think they need to add depth through lines two through four. What they have right now obviously isn't cutting it.
So do you think they should break up the Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak line, maybe move Pasternak down?
No, because
people talked about that.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that line really produced. Yeah. You got to keep them together. You need
can't
to add,
break that up.
You need to add depth, because if you add depth, you keep that production from the top line, and you still have enough pieces on that team to have some consistency through you know, lines one through four. Yeah. I don't want to see them break up that top line. I think after seeing what they did in round one, it's hard to want to see that. You just can't.
I'll say defensively, I think it's time, unfortunately, to move on from Torey Krug. He's been a great player here, fan favorite.
You're going to have to pick, yeah.
I feel like if they can get his money off the books, that would help. And they do need to somehow restructure this defensive core. They're going to have Carlo coming back, McAvoy, Grizzlick. I think, you know, they got a guy like Jurovac and Ninen, their draft pick last year. They got a couple other guys in Providence or playing in junior leagues that may be ready. You need to start looking at what this defensive core is going to look like post-Chara. And we know it's going to be McAvoy. We know it's going to be Carlo. We know it's going to be Grizzlick. We don't really know beyond that. And I don't think Torey Krug is a part of it. So I'd rather get his money off the book sooner than later. They can bring up some of those young defensemen, get them ready, and then, like you said, use that money to find another goal scorer to play with David Krejci on that second line or play with Backes on the third line, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a very interesting offseason. Expectations are high now. Remember where we were at the beginning of the year. We totally wrote this team off. But expectations are high. It's going to be an intense offseason. Of course, we'll have your coverage throughout it. One team not ready to head to the offseason yet. We'll get that on the flip side.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Because what if tomorrow never comes? I'm not waiting. I'm not waiting for the confetti to fall.
Did I really end that last segment by saying flip side? Catch you on the flip side.
I think you did.
That is, by the way, Tori Kelly, her song Confetti, we thought would be appropriate to use here.
Yeah, I think it got to the confetti part a little bit too quick.
A little bit.
Isn't there some music before that?
Well, we figured we'd drop the confetti a little early here on the show. Celtics, if you missed the game, what was that? That was Saturday, right?
Saturday night.
Oh, boy. This series has just been a lot of fun.
Oh, I love it. You know what? I hate Philadelphia and everything that city stands for besides the freedom. And
I mean, of course.
And I just love when Philadelphia sports fans are upset.
It's nice seeing them put in their place.
Yeah.
For the record, we're recording the show Monday afternoon. So game four has not happened yet. For all we know, by the time you're listening to this, the Celtics have moved on already. So we'll talk a little bit about that. About the possibility, we'll say possibility, knock on wood of them moving on. But what's happened so far? My big takeaway from this series, and there's a lot of takeaways from this series, so I didn't even ask you before we started because I don't think we're going to have the same one because there's so many angles you can go here. Is Ben Simmons getting exposed? Is Ben Simmons a bust? Because, my God, you have the 1 point in game two. People are understating that dunk he missed in game three,
that
and he's lucky about the confetti because the confetti kind of erased this. That was, he throws that down, Sixers have the lead, building erupts, they got the crowd behind him, ball game. That dunk goes down. He had nobody in his way, and he just spiked it off the back of the rim. So, had a bad game two, choked in a big moment in game three, and then all the turnovers after. He's basically a taller version of Rajon Rondo who's not good in the playoffs. And no, you laugh, I'm serious. He can't shoot. Look, he's a very good passer. He can go to the basket.
He doesn't pass out open layups, though.
He can't shoot, and he doesn't have Rondo's playoff gene, clearly. And look, this is the first time we're seeing the Sixers in the playoffs for what could be, you know, a 10-15-year run. But are they going to be, and based off what I've seen this year, are they going to be a team like the Raptors where they just kind of get in every year, maybe win a round and then get embarrassed? And Ben Simmons would be a big part of that. Embiid's been good. But I don't think you need to stop Joel Embiid to beat the Sixers. That's what I've learned in this series.
I think a lot of NBA fanboys have kind of jumped the gun with the Sixers team. They have a lot of really great young players.
Not even this team, just Ben Simmons. Fine if they want to get excited about the team. But Ben Simmons might suck.
Ben Simmons as well, you could say. I think Ben Simmons is a tremendous talent. I think he will be a star in the NBA. From what I've seen this year, I think he has all the skill sets you need to become that guy, with the exception of being a good shooter. But as we've seen, you can develop a shot. I think the team as a whole, outside of Joel Embiid, right now, there's no one who can take over. Ben Simmons did show us that. And so that is one takeaway I'd agree with you. He's not a guy who can really take over a game and be the clutch player. And neither is Joel Embiid, for that matter. He was 10 for 26 in game three.
I've been impressed with Embiid. I've been impressed.
He's great. But
he doesn't have the help, though. You still need the help to take over.
And that's what it is.
Right.
And Ben Simmons evidently is not that guy. Markelle Fultz has not played one minute.
He hasn't played a minute.
You have Sarge.
Meanwhile, how's Jason Tatum played?
Unbelievably, yeah. Jason Tatum's playing better than Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz combined. I mean,
so is Aaron Baines. Didn't Gershon get a couple of minutes in game Shemmy one? Ochoa. That would qualify him.
Shane Larkin.
What's your big takeaway from the series?
My big takeaway is Al Horford is extremely valuable. That's one. There's not one main takeaway. The one thing that I was really impressed with in Game 3 specifically, and which is not getting talked about at all, there's Al Horford making plays at the end of the game, and those individual plays are being talked about, and what he did on the offensive end specifically is being talked about. But the job that he did on Joel Embiid was phenomenal. Yeah. He was all over him, and I think that's the most underplayed storyline from that game. Al Horford was the best player on the floor, if you count both sides. So that's one of my biggest takeaways. The fact that this guy, who's a max contract player, who has been labeled average Al, was probably the biggest factor in that win for the Celtics, if you ask me. And I mean, just overall in the series, the Celtics have a bunch of guys who can make plays.
Yeah.
And Ben Simmons, we just mentioned it, He hasn't proven to be that guy yet.
Make play. You saw turnover after turnover. One quick thing on Al Horford. This is maybe the people who defended Average Al, who went against the name Average Al, a big part of their claim was he's saving himself for the playoffs. He doesn't want to wear himself out. It's what he did last season. He wants to be good to go in the playoffs. That claim has a lot of validity to it now, because I think that may be what some of this is. He was trying to make sure he was ready for this moment, and he clearly was. And just the way he's him and Rozier, I mean, those Sixers turnovers in game three, the Sixers have a problem right now, and this may be the coaching. It may be because they're young. There's an old, I don't know if it's a saying or a proverb or whatever the term would be, but being chased by, let's say, like a lion or a tiger, the last thing you want to do is look over your shoulder, because it slows you down and it allows whatever chasing you to catch up with you. The Sixers have spent this entire series looking over their shoulder. Right. You could tell it. Once they hit that 23-point lead, the Celtics went on like a 6-0 run, and the Sixers just turned and looked the other way. That is completely what they were over. Literally, one of Ben Simmons' turnovers was because he was like physically looking over his shoulder. So I would say Philly's got a big problem rubbernecking in this series. And then one real quick here, because I do want to get to the Cavs stuff a little bit. You see the difference in coaching, too. And exactly what Brad Stevens has meant. And I'm blanking on his first name. Brett Brown.
The mana.
I don't think Brett Brown is back with the Sixers next year.
Really?
I think Jay Wright's on his way to Philly. They're gonna try to do a lot of what they've done has kind of followed the Celtics mold, because the Celtics were a couple years ahead of them on this
and
rebuild.
Then they're going to take a college
right.
guy.
You go get the big name college coach, especially if they end up with LeBron James, because LeBron James loves Jay Wright. Now, they'll end up getting in a spat and he'll get Jay Wright fired and bring in some puppet. LeBron will. But I think you've also kind of seen the limitations of Brett Brown in this series. Look at the difference. The inbound plays, right? The inbound plays at the end of the game. Yeah, Every single one of the Celtics ones worked. Every single one of the Sixers ones not only didn't work in terms of them not getting off a shot, it resulted in a turnover. Ignore that noise in the background if you can hear it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you put it on Brett Brown. It depends who you usually play. That's the problem. The Sixers are a young team.
I'm not used to blaming people on the Sixers. They're a bad team.
they have been, yeah. But the Sixers, they're young. They're young. They're a young team.
But, I mean, so are the Suns, and the Suns still aren't good. I'm not saying the Sixers are the Suns, but
I mean, they
my
have
point
talent.
Is,
but the
young team doesn't necessarily mean that, I don't know if they can use that as an excuse. The Celtics are younger, technically.
Yeah, but there's no one, like, J.J. Redick is not Al Horford. As a leader, as a two-way player, he is not Al Horford. And they don't have anyone else on that team who is like Horford. And I don't know. I just think that Ainge has drafted specific types of players, and I think Joel Embiid falls into that category, the type of player that like someone who's engaged,
yeah,
who gives it his all. I think Embiid is that guy. I think Simmons is to an extent, but he played at LSU. He's never really faced adversity on the court.
When he had that one-point game, he said after, he refused to give the Celtics any credit. He just said, I didn't have a good game. And that, to me, he was ducking respect.
Well, I don't like the guy at all.
I think he's kind of trying to duck the spotlight. He doesn't want to say that the Celtics guarded him well because he doesn't want to hurt his shoe sales.
Well, yeah, he plays cocky. He plays this cocky, arrogant guy, and then you hit a wall.
Back it up.
Yeah, and he hasn't faced adversity yet. I think that's another point that's not being talked about. This is a kid who went to LSU, a team where there was no pressure on him. They weren't considered a favorite to, you know, make a deep run.
And let's not forget, he was the best player in the nation, and he couldn't get them to the tournament.
Yeah,
he was the first number one overall draft pick, college, like not counting Yao Ming and international.
And Markelle
guys.
Fultz is a similar type of player.
He was the first number one draft pick to not get his team to the tournament since the field expanded to 64. And it's not like he was at some small ass school. He was at LSU. It's not Kentucky, but that's a powerhouse. Yeah. If LSU was the best player in the nation, they should make the tournament. And I felt like people really underlooked that when he was drafted.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was discussed, and I think that was discussed with Markelle Fultz too. Yeah. Do these guys have that thing in their DNA? We know Rozier does. They went on a run. We know Smart does. He was the number one player at Oklahoma State. Tatum was on Duke, and all these guys were unbelievable players in college.
I mean, look at these, and I think there's something to be said for this, especially not as much in football, but in basketball. Look at the schools the Celtics main contributors from: Florida, Duke, Louisville, Oklahoma State. Not the same as the top three, but still an impressive program. Philly's got guys from Washington, LSU, and then who's their Embiid, Kansas, fine, and then their fourth best player, Saric, who didn't even play college ball.
Yeah.
So I think there is something to be said for that. I know we're in the middle of a point, but I do want to get to the Cavs real quick, and we are kind of supposed to be a short segment because we didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but. Let's say Celtics wrap it up, if not tonight, and I think the Sixers are gassed at this point.
Yeah, they're done.
Emotionally, I think they're cooked. It might take five games, and Toronto just looks like a bug on a windshield. That, talk about embarrassment. give me a quick 30 seconds thought on a Celtics-Cavs series.
It's going to be a good series. I think it's going to be tighter than people anticipate. The Celtics team is playing very well, and we've seen it. There's really not much surrounding LeBron James. Will they be able to limit LeBron James? Not a ton. But will they pick their spots and make these games close games? Absolutely. It will be a closer series, even if they lose in five or six games. It will be close. One more thing. Antetokounmpo round one, Simmons round two. It's a good lead up to go cool. against LeBron.
I think having to guard Giannis really helps them with dealing with Ben Simmons. Just my two cents on a potential Celtics-Cavs series. Celtics would be, if they make the conference finals, I think the fourth best team of the final four. You'd have Houston, Golden State, supposedly. I'm guessing here again. But Houston, Golden State, Cleveland, and the Celtics, not in any order. But I think the Celtics are the fourth team. That being said, based on matchups, and against Houston and Golden State this year, Celtics are 2-2. If they can get by Cleveland, which I don't know if they can do. I think it's a close 6-7 series.
It's a possibility, which we haven't said in the past.
If they get by Cleveland, I think they have a better chance of beating Houston or Golden State than beating Cleveland, if that makes sense. Mm. I think if they get to the finals, it's in play. I'm not going to say a title's in play until they beat... Look, people are going to say to me, so basically they can't win a championship until they're in the championship. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, this is the toughest obstacle they have to pass. The toughest obstacle they have to pass is not in the finals. Not take anything away from the Rockets or the Warriors. But 9 times out of 10, especially in the playoffs in basketball, the best player on the floor wins. LeBron's the best player in the league. Harden's very good. Durant's very good. But those guys aren't LeBron. If the Celtics can beat LeBron, they should be able to beat Harden or Durant. But they got to get there first. And that, I don't know about.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I think this is the first time, just one last point, and then we got to go to the last segment. This is the first time in a while that the Celtics have, in my opinion, been legitimately competitive or will be legitimately competitive with the Cavaliers. Way more so than last year. There's a legitimate shot, and it's not a shoo-in. And this is a game that could go six, seven games. And this is even a game, rather a series. And this is even a series where the Celtics could win. We could see them if they go on a run and carry over what they did round two. Watch out. This is a team that's playing really well, and that's without Kyrie or Hayward.
If the Celtics lose Monday and win game five at home, do they drop confetti?
No, that's for championships.
If I conference, if you put up a banner for it, I conference championship, I'm fine with confetti. If you wouldn't put up a banner, you don't drop confetti. All right. Speaking of confetti, useless pomp and circumstance. We'll discuss that on the other side.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
So all of us know that one, I guess, degenerate gambler, that one person who can't help themselves.
Yes.
And if you couldn't get a hold of that person this weekend, it's because of the Kentucky Derby. And if you don't know one of those people, you probably lost some money this weekend.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard back from that person, they probably
lost a lot of money this weekend.
Probably fleed the country and are running from their bookie.
All right. So, the Kentucky Derby was this weekend. It's a horse race in Kentucky. It's the first of the Triple Crown between the Preakness and the Belmont. And it's one of the dumbest sporting events. I'm hesitant to call it a sporting event. It's one of the dumbest events that really, and it's been around so long. I think this was the 144th or something.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think at this point it's just kind of tradition. But first of all, the horses are not athletes. Can we put that nonsense to bed?
They're physical specimens.
Yeah.
They're not.
Sure.
No, they're not. That's
the
people trait.
The jockeys are more athletes than they are.
No, they're not.
More so than the horses. The horses don't know what's going on.
A 4'11", 100-pound man is not an athlete.
Look, I don't want to turn this into an animal rights thing. If you think horse racing is an animal rights violation, you have every right to do that. The horses don't know what the horse doesn't know it won the Kentucky Derby. The horse has no idea what's going on.
No, not at all.
Like, a couple years ago, one of the horses was nominated for Athlete of the Year at the ESPYs. Which, come on. What, are you going to bring the horse up on stage and give it the trophy?
Imagine being starstruck by an animal.
Unless it's
is
the dog.
Lassie?
Okay, if it's the dog from Air Bud, I can understand.
You can just look at any golden retriever; they all look the same.
That's true. But it's stupid. Okay, so the horses are not athletes. We've checked. I have my whole list of things I want to make sure we touch
one.
On.
The jockeys are not athletes. We can agree on that, right?
They're more so. The jockeys are amusing. I actually don't mind the jockeys because most of them have pretty good senses of humor. And their interviews are hilarious because
I feel like the jockeys
kind of get that it's all a little ridiculous. Bob Costas was interviewing one of them and was like, you know, how like the Kentucky Derby, like, do you do anything differently? He's like, I've been riding horses since I was 12, man. What do you want me to tell you? I'm going to sit there and hit the thing so it runs. Like, I don't mind. The jockeys are the one part that's tolerable. Then we have the broadcast of the Kentucky Derby.
It's ridiculous all day.
4.5 hours. 2:30 to 7. I'm trying to watch the Celtics. My brother keeps flipping back to the Kentucky Derby. How would people rather watch horses run in a circle for 2 minutes than human beings? And I can't believe I have to make that distinction. Human beings play playoff basketball. Look, if the race itself for 2 minutes, fine. I'll flip over for 2 minutes at 6 o'clock and watch it. Whatever. What I'm not going to watch is 3.5 hours of a bunch of celebrities I've never heard of dressed like jackasses, putting money that I'll never even sniff just on the table on animals, and then 58 minutes of post-race coverage interview. Once again, my favorite Twitter thing every year, somebody tweets, once again, the horse declined to comment.
It's all, like you haven't even touched on the way people dress. It's like they all show up and they're like, I hope I win dressed like the biggest asshole of the year award.
No, it's like the red carpet, but it's less people I care about.
It's a red carpet.
Nobody's getting an award, and it's longer.
Like the hats, they're so you can't walk through a doorway with that. You got to take it off. It's a process to go from one room to another.
It's just how do you enjoy that? especially because it's either 100 degrees out or it's raining.
It's because it's an 144-year-old event. And when it started, I'm pretty sure when it started, slavery was still a thing. And people still dress the same that they did back then just to bring back the old nostalgia.
So elitist.
From a stupid. It really is. It's like I look at it. I'm like, oh, God, just all those. I hate every person who pays for the suite. Like, if you go there and you go on the infield and you're just getting hammered and it's just like, I'm getting drunk today. That's fine.
Do but I think it would be cool to go once? Yes.
If you pay $12,500 to sit in the big box,
no, like I'll go the cheap one time. I'd like to go the cheapest way possible. I'm not gonna. Maybe I'll dress like that. I bought the ugliest shirt this week. It's like pink orange and it has popsicles on it. It's a Hawaiian shirt, so I'm set. But I'd go like once, maybe for the experience, but that's it. And you mentioned the drinking. What the hell's a mint julep?
I don't know.
It's like it's bourbon and sugar
and mint.
It sounds disgusting. That's a hangover waiting to happen.
I think if there's a drink that's only meant to be drank at a at like a specific event, like eggnog, like it's probably not that good of a drink. Like just
eggnog's very good.
Eggnog's good. About
eggnog. Mint julep, I will pass on. Let me ask you this because I had this conversation with somebody. I actually got an argument with my brother about this. If you could attend one of these two events, which would you rather attend, the Kentucky Derby or the Daytona 500?
Oh, Daytona 500.
Thank you.
It's not even close.
Thank you.
Not even. You can bring as much beer as you want. You can bring a cooler.
It's more action. It's a better choice of alcohol. There's a chance of a crash. And the people racing are actually aware that they're racing.
And it's a blue-collar thing.
I don't want to make this a whole class discussion.
No, but it is.
It kind of is. I would so much rather be at the Daytona 500 or any. Somebody told me that Talladega instead of Daytona. That's fine. Pick your
whatever.
Race. You get the whole point
no,
of the discussion.
I'm not going there to watch.
What other sporting event gets 4.5 hours of coverage? Because the Daytona, not even the Masters, because the Masters is split on multiple channels. 4.5 uninterrupted hours of coverage. There's the Super Bowl, and there's the Kentucky Derby. I don't think there's another one. I may be missing one. The Olympics, fine. And I know you're not a big Olympics guy.
I hate the Olympics.
March Madness is different games, right? There's no other, and the Kentucky Derby doesn't deserve it.
No, it doesn't. It really is a dumb, stupid tradition. I don't get it. I do want to go once. I do like
right. I would want to experience it once.
I want to go, but I want to go show up in like sweatpants and a white t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like I want to look like a slob just to show those people up.
I want to go dress like I'm at the Daytona 500 to the Kentucky Derby and then go dress like I'm at the Kentucky Derby to the Daytona 500.
That's a good idea. But what I don't get is even the reporters.
What's with all the cars? I thought these were horses.
Even the reporters dress ridiculously. It's like, I'm not going to like take this interview seriously when you're wearing a 10-gallon
right.
hat. Like, and Johnny Ware, I know people love the guy, ironically.
Okay, Johnny Ware is the one guy who can get away with it.
No,
that's
it's
just,
stupid.
No, but that's
he looks
just
dumb.
How he dresses.
I know,
that's how he goes to buy milk on Sunday
you
morning.
You know what? It's a self-absorbed thing. It's like, look
Johnny
at me.
Johnny Ware is the one person who should be reporting on the Kentucky Derby because that's his mint juleps and dressing like
okay,
that. That's
his
life.
I agree with that. He should be reporting on it. But it's still stupid, and the way he dresses is dumb.
Oh, all the celebrities picking the horses. Like, they know. There's Eddie Olchek was the only celebrity that I actually put any faith in, because we know how much Eddie loves the ponies. We got a couple more things we want to touch on here before we wrap up. Speaking of old traditions, Red Sox-Yankees renew their rivalry this week, Tuesday to Thursday. That's in the Bronx. I'm excited. How can you not be after what happened last time? It's the first time the Red Sox and Yankees will meet while sporting the two best records in baseball since June of 2002.
So that's a crazy.
Really, the rivalry's back. And, I mean, look, I'll be watching Tyler Austin. I'll be watching Joe Kelly. I think there'll be a brawl. Maybe not, but it's going to be a good series.
That's not even being talked about.
The one thing that bums me out, and I guess there's nothing you can do about it, no Chris Sale in the series for the Red Sox. It's going to be Price,
Pomerantz,
and Porcello. I think it's the three Ps. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one, though. And the Yankees, 15 of their last 16, we're recording this Monday. And they're looking really good. I'm hoping like it would be a huge momentum shift for the Red Sox because although
they
get just
back on track,
although they just had won 3 of 4, they haven't been looking quite as sharp as they were originally.
The offense looked good. They put up I think it was 5, 6, and 6 in those three wins. I mean, it's Mookie Betts. Most of it's Mookie Betts,
yeah.
And it sounds like he'll play. I know he had the injury in Texas, but Cora said he expects him to play. And I don't expect if Mookie doesn't play in the series, he's going to get some heat. I mean, that would be a Tuukka Rask-esque move.
No, I think he'll play. But I, what I'm looking for is a starting pitching. Pomerantz is someone who's been giving up, as he usually does, or at least 2 years ago he was doing this a lot. Didn't do it as much last year, obviously. Gives up three runs in the first inning, then settles down. He can't afford that. He needs to come out and start strong if they want to have a shot, especially considering they're going up against Severino tomorrow night.
It's Severino, Tanaka, and Sabathia. So the Yankees get, really, they're big names out there. The Red Sox just missed Chris Sale. But it's going to be a good series, and we'll recap it next Monday. We're definitely going to be talking about that. One more thing that's this weekend I'm very excited for, the fifth major, the Players' Championship. Technically, not, it doesn't count on the European Tour, so it's not a major, but one of the biggest purses on tour, TPC Sawgrass down in Florida. Beautiful course. The Island 17th is one of the biggest challenges in golf. And Tiger Woods is paired with Phil Mickelson. Now, I won't lie, I saw that, and at first I was happy. Then I got a little concerned, because after all the Tiger hype building up to the Masters, golf's kind of bottomed out after Tiger did. And it's normally a quiet period for golf between the Masters and the Players, and that's fine, but I wonder if there's some golf fatigue now. And people were so locked in on Tiger for that, let's call it a month, 2 month stretch, that now they need a break from it. And if this is the PGA kind of desperately trying to get fans back in by pairing Tiger with Phil. That's what I'm kind of worried about, is the PGA's going into a scramble mode, trying to force the attention back on Tiger, which you want it to happen naturally.
I mean, does it really matter, though? Because what it really comes down to is him playing well. Like, if he plays well, who cares? And if he doesn't, it doesn't matter who he's paired with.
I don't want to see the PGA get desperate, because when leagues get desperate, then, I mean, you get, like, the nonsense that the NBA pulls. And I don't want to see the PGA go that way. I feel like pairing Tiger with Phil is a desperate move.
I don't know.
Let Tiger be the draw. Let Tiger be Tiger. Don't force it. Let it come naturally. Because now there's extra pressure on Tiger, because he's got to keep up with Phil.
Do you think that affects him?
I mean, I don't know. And ignore the sound in the background. Sorry about that. I don't know that it affects him in terms of, oh, I'm playing with Phil Mickelson, like, I got to be good. But there is something to be said. Look, I played this weekend for the first time. I played like crap. My brother played really well. And it sucks as the other. Now, I'm not Tiger Woods, obviously. It shouldn't be that comparison. But there is something to be said for, if you're playing with somebody who's playing really well and you're not, it wears on you. Phil's been playing excellent as of late. So is Tiger going to feel like he has to keep up with Phil?
Or maybe it motivates him.
Maybe. Look, and that's the old Tiger, it would. So we'll see. But Players' Championship this week. So we got Red Sox, Yankees Tuesday through Thursday. We got the Players Thursday through Sunday. And then Sunday will either be Game 7 against Philly, which, my God, or Game 1 against Cleveland or Toronto. But nice. We've had a night. Look, I know it's early to mid-spring is always a strong time for sports, but it feels like this year especially has been kind to Boston.
Oh, if you have three teams playing in May, it's a good year.
Shape. So, and maybe four, the AAFL is announcing the American Alliance of Football League. Something is announcing
doesn't
a couple
count.
More teams this week. So that's a spring league. We'll see. Once I start bringing that up, hang on. I brought up the AAFL and the XFL in this show. No, that was off air. I talked about the XFL.
You did, yeah.
Well, now I did. I brought up those two things without bringing up the NFL. Next week, Eastern Conference Finals talk. Recap the Players, recap Red Sox, Yankees. Sports is still rolling strong. You got to love it.
Sports.
We like sports, and we don't care who knows. Although, if we didn't care, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, which you can follow on Twitter, @CallinItPodcast, and check us out on. You see how I did that?
Yeah, that was nice.
And check us out online, clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barnes. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.